together over in straight sets. BBC News.
In the Hour from Now, and this being the first Sunday of the month, James Naughtie brings you Book Club, which for August is Sadie Jones's novel The Outcast. Now though, for the classic serial, Honoré de Balzac's Eugénie Grandet, dramatised by Rose Tremaine and starring Ian McKellen, Alison Pettit and Anna Calder Marshall. Eugénie has fallen deeply in love with her cousin Charles, sent to live with the Grandet family after his debt-ridden father commits suicide. But Grandet despises his useless popinjay of a nephew and has sent him to the West Indies to make his fortune. Unknown to Grandet, Eugénie has given Charles the valuable collection of gold coins that her father had meticulously built up for her over the years. A day of reckoning awaits them all.
I don't think there was ever a winter so cold as the one which came in after Mr. Charles was sent away. November, December, bitter frosts at night and everything stark white in the mornings. Sometimes, if the sun deigned to shine, there came a silvery shimmering to the garden, and I'd say to Miss Eugénie, "Look at that now, isn't that a picture?" And she would stare at it and say, "I know it is beautiful, Nanon, I know it is, but I can't see beauty in anything anymore." She was waiting for the day when her cousin would return. I told her years might pass before he came back, or perhaps he never would return. She put her hands over her ears. She said, "He loves me, Nana. You seem to have forgotten that." And then the new year came, and I remember it was raining on and off all day long.
Who is it?
It's your mother.
Did the postman come?
No. Now listen, Eugénie. It's New Year's Eve, and I think this would be a good moment for you to make a resolution.
What resolution?
Well, I know that the business with your cousin upset you, but you must try to put that aside.
It wasn't a business, and it didn't upset me. It gave me the only moment of complete happiness I've ever known. And when Charles comes back...
Your father will never permit it.
Then we'll run away.
What will you live on? Charles has nothing. Do you think your collection of coins is going to save you?
I don't have my coins anymore.
What?
I gave them away.
You gave them away? What are you saying, Eugénie?
I gave the coins to Charles.
Oh, Lord, have mercy, ma fille. Whatever possessed you?
His need was greater than mine.
What will you say to your father tonight when he asks to see your money?
I'll tell him the truth. The coins were mine. Am I not free to give away my own things?
Not those. He begged you to keep them safe.
I've kept them safe for years and years, and now they've gone to help Charles.
Oh, God. Perhaps I can have a word with Monsieur de Grassin to get replacements from the bank before this evening.
Replacements?
Oh, no. You're right, your father knows those coins too well.
Oh, Lord, save us. What are we going to do?
The question I ask, gentlemen, is what is being done to bring the creditors to their senses?
To their senses? Well, personally, I doubt they will move from their present position. They feel that 2% as interim settlement is insufficient.
It's 80,000.
And that's a lot of money, but it has to be split many ways. They won't accept it.
How am I to afford more than that?
Well, you must reflect on it.
Oh, well, that's right. Oh, off you go. Nothing solved, nothing advanced. Just keep taking my fees.
Talking of fees, I've presented my invoice 3 times and no settlement has been forthcoming from you.
All in good time, de Grasse. When I see some resolution, you'll be paid.
It is not fair, Grandet. My expenses in Paris on your behalf were considerable.
Oh, yes, had a night out at the Moulin Rouge, did you?
I won't stoop to respond to such vile innuendo. Good day to you.
He's got to get nice and wet. I don't know why I hired him. He's messing everything up. I should have put my trust in you, Cruchot.
Well, what can I say?
Come to supper, tonight. Why not? Try to bring a little cheer to my table for the new year.
That's very kind of you. I'd be delighted.
New Year's Eve. Often it had been a joyful feast in this house. Fires were lit and candles, and sometimes, after the meal, Miss Eugénie played the piano and we had a little sing-song. And Monsieur Grandet, he loved to hear his daughter play and sing. His eyes would shine as they watched her, shine with love, because he did love her, I know it. It wasn't in his nature to show it, but he loved her with all the heart that he had. But this New Year's Eve, oh, sweet Lord, I shall never forget this one as long as I live.
May I just say, Mademoiselle Eugénie, that I would have bought a New Year's gift for you, but my invitation to supper came at short notice.
I don't want any gifts, Monsieur Crusher.
That was a kind thought, though, eh? Ma fille.
I've often wondered what use are kind thoughts if they're not translated into kind actions.
Oh, little New Year's philosophy. Did you get that from your cousin? Did you? Let me remind you, this household is not run upon fancy notions, it's run upon material prudence. Now, I've got something here for you, Eugénie, so go and get your coin box.
Oh, no, Grande. You don't need to see those old rupees and things again. Let it be for once.
Well, of course I need to see them, especially now when everybody's trying to filch everything I own. And I've got a new coin to add. Go and get the box, Eugénie.
We are still eating. Later she can go.
No, go now.
I'm afraid I don't have the coins anymore.
I hope I'm dreaming. What did you say?
I said the coins are gone.
I am dreaming, I must be. Gone where?
Were the coins mine, Papa, or not?
I beg your pardon?
If they were mine, then I'm free to do whatever I like with them, aren't I?
No, you are not. You were pledged to keep them safe.
Safe? For what? For whom?
To accrue value. I thought I'd explained this to you 100 times. So what have you sold them for? How much did you get?
Nothing.
Have you gone mad? Madame Grande, it seems you've raised a child who's lost her reason.
Leave it, Grande. She gave them away, that's all. She can build up the collection again.
Gave them away? Gave them away? Am I hearing correctly? Crucial. Is that what my wife said?
I think she did, sir.
May I get down from the table now?
No, you may not. Year in, year out, every birthday, every new year, I've been massing this little fortune for you. Not one anniversary has been missed. They have been the living expression of a father's love for his child. All the currencies of the world, because what father who loves his child does not want to give for the world? And now you're telling me that you're giving it away. Is that it? Is that it?
Please, don't shout like that. Your anger is making me ill.
If she had taken all the frippery bonnets and dresses you've made for her and trampled them in the mud, would you not be angry? Would your heart not break?
Perhaps mine would, but you have no heart.
No heart? Gosh, she's just because I have to be severe to keep us all from ruin, you think I don't feel anything? Oh, how wrong you are. To hear that all my gifts and my daughter have been chucked in the river nearly chokes me to death. And where do you think you're going? No, you're not. You sit down at once and explain yourself. But if you're about to tell me that you've given your coins to that dandy of a nephew, to that son of a criminal, then be aware that this information could bring my life to an end, right here, in my own dining room. Eugénie, you're not leaving! Since when did you disobey your father in this fashion? Since when did you treat me like a mongrel dog? Close the door and answer me.
She gave them to Charles. He had almost nothing left after you sold his possessions. She took pity on him out of the goodness of her heart.
Goodness of her heart? What goodness? Does anybody else in this room believe it's good to take from a loving father to give to a wastrel? Is that what you believe, daughter? Is it?
All I believed was that the coins were mine to do as I pleased with them. If they were not mine, then why did you tell me they were?
They were yours to save, not to throw away. The only idea of the value you put into that popinjay's pomaded palm.
Charles had nothing in the world. That's all I know. So I gave him what I had.
There's at least a fine altruism in it.
You be quiet, Crusoe. I feel sick. Nana! Come in and take all this food away. The New Year's buried before it's begun. It's a corpse. Nana!
Sir?
Clear the plates and the glasses. Tip the apple tart into the swill bucket. This household is in mourning for a lost daughter.
I don't know what you mean, sir.
Just do as I say. Oh, that's it. Cram a last mouthful in, Crusoe. And you. You! You're dead, as far as I'm concerned. I don't want to see you anymore.
Grundy!
Be quiet. Everybody, be quiet. Words kill. I don't want to hear any more. Wife, you take Eugenie to her room and lock her in. Oh, come on.
No.
Why are you shilly-shallying off to prison with you? And you will live off bread and water, nothing else. And when you say your prayers at night, you can leave me out of them. You have no father.
My dearest cousin, though I have no word from you, believe me when I tell you that you're always near me. I can hear the sea of the Indies breaking at your feet. I can imagine your footprints in the sand. My world is small, but the one which surrounds you is very vast. And when I go there in my mind, I feel a beautiful calm descend upon me. My small world is grown yet smaller now, Charles. I'm confined to my room. My father wishes to punish me for giving you my coins. But I don't really mind. This room can become an ocean. It can become a white strand. And the sun shines down and I feel its warmth. Or is it the warmth of your hand, your cheek? Your lips that I feel.
Who is it?
I've got the key. Your father's gone out. I've brought you some bread and pate. Homemade. And the bread's fresh. Here. Oh,
thank you, Nana.
You eat my lamb. Then come to your mother's room.
My mother's room?
She's not well, Eugenie. I wasn't going to worry you with it, but...
What's the matter with her?
The doctor says it's just a chill in this icy weather. I hope it is, but she's very weak.
Oh, poor Mamel. I'll come now.
Eat your little meal first.
No, I can have it later. Let's go to Mamel.
So, dear Greta, I hope you've got good news for me. I've had enough of the bad.
Well, it's good and it's bad.
Oh, that's it. Turn it all into a riddle, typical banker.
No riddle. Your increased offer of 3% has been rejected, but...
That's the bad. And where's the good?
I sense what I can only call movement among the group.
Movement?
I know creditors. They're volatile. What haunts them is the idea that they may wind up with nothing.
Well, that would serve them right for lending money to a gambler, eh?
There is no profit in thoughts like that. But, as I say, I get the feeling that the majority of the creditors are near to settling. I think if you were to increase your offer to 4%, then we might conclude an interim deal.
4%? That's double what we offered before.
Are you telling me you don't have it? Grande?
Well, if I have, it's only because I made a little profit on some gold.
Yes, I recall that it was I who alerted you to the rise in gold prices.
Did you? Well, that's what bankers should be doing, being helpful to their clients instead of poaching from them.
Will you authorise me to go back to the creditors and offer
4%? 160,000. Oh, God's teeth. I'm not sure my hand will let me sign that away.
Well, it's up to you. But I thought you'd want this matter settled, at least for the time being.
Offer the damn 4%, then. But I'll go no higher.
Is it my hearing, or is the ticking of that clock very loud?
Shall I take the clock away?
Or don't they say when death is near, you hear the ticking of time?
Don't talk of death, Mammal. It's only a chill.
I told your father his anger would kill me.
No, Mammal. You're not dying. Is she, Nanon?
Since New Year's Eve, she's been very poorly.
We should send for Dr. Bergerin.
He's visited once. He prescribed rest.
How can I rest when my child is a prisoner in her room, living on bread and water?
All right, Mammal. You mustn't think about that. You must try to get strong again.
I took Eugenie some patty just now. I can smuggle other things
and
in.
And if he finds out, you'll be sent away.
He wouldn't dare.
There's him now. Go back to your room, Eugenie. Quickly.
I don't want to leave you, Maman.
Oh, my poor girl, what's to become of you? What horrible fate brought us here.
Don't think about that. Charles will come back in a year. Or less, I know he will. And all our lives will change.
But why hasn't he written to you?
I expect he has. But letters from the Indies across all those oceans, they might take a very long time.
I'm sure that's it. And then one day the postman will come up the street and... Oh, fly, Pet, quickly. Run to your room.
I love you, Mum.
Sweet Joe. I pray for you every day.
Don't cry. It will come right. Rest and get strong again.
Damn bankers. Stupid pen pushers. Jenny, what are you doing here? Who unlocked your door?
My mother's very ill, don't you see? Don't you care?
I said, who unlocked your door?
I did.
Do you hear my orders? The child is to stay in her room.
Only out of compassion, sir, so that she could see her mother.
Compassion? I suppose you think that's a fine word, do you, Nana? So what compassion do you think she had for me when she gave away her coins?
I asked Nanon to bring Eugenie. I'm dying, Grande, and I want her with me.
Dying? No, you didn't finish knitting your muffler. That's all you've got to chill. Your mother lived to 81. This dying business is a pure charade.
I don't think so, sir.
You know nothing. Go downstairs where you belong and make your mistress a hot toddy. And you, you disobedient, ungrateful girl, get back to prison and don't show your face anymore. I don't want to see it.
Will they settle at 4%, do you think?
They're conferring. He says he won't go higher, but he may have to advance to 5 or the bankruptcy will be declared. Mm. Or the contagion of that will undo him. No one will buy his wine or his timber.
He's undoing himself already. You've heard what he's done to Eugenie.
I heard rumours.
He's his own worst enemy. I'm going to try to reason with him.
Oh, he's deaf to reason, Crucio. You and I both know that the only thing that moves him is money.
How much does he really have?
My guess is 5 or 6 million. Possibly a lot more.
And they live like paupers. But if Madame Grande dies...
Her portion is willed to Eugenie.
Well, precisely. There's my leverage. He must see sense.
Do you still have feelings for the girl?
I try to master them. She's still dreaming of the cousin. But he would never make her happy, would he?
Well, we saw what he was. Spoiled. Hmm. A seducer.
Exactly. Whereas, I know, even if she didn't love me in that way, we could make a contented life.
Nanon! What are you cooking?
A partridge.
Oh, a partridge? Not sure I want one of those.
Don't be silly, sir. You and Mr. Crucio will enjoy it.
Well, either that or it'll choke me. But he's not a bad stick, Crucio. Not a bad old male, is he? Perhaps I should have married Eugenie off to him. Then she need never have set eyes on the poppins, eh?
she doesn't love Monsieur Crucial.
Love? You women, you're always going on about love, but you've a very poor understanding of what it is.
Well, we do we?
Yes, you do. I'll tell you what love is. Love is working night and day to keep things safe. Love is being loyal to what is right and good.
There's Monsieur Crucial. When you've eaten the partridge, I'm going to boil the bones and the gizzards for a broth and send it up to Miss Eugenie.
No, you are not. I forbid you to do that.
Then I'm going to disobey you. She's getting weak. Do you want to lose your wife and daughter in one stroke?
I'm sorry to have to broach a business matter at dinner, Monsieur Grandet, but as your lawyer, I feel it my duty to raise this.
Raise what?
Well, it's a delicate matter to do with your wife's condition.
She's a batelier, Crucial.
But if she were not to survive... But I just want to remind you that Eugenie, as your only child, would inherit half the goods and property your wife brought to the marriage, including the Fafond estate.
But half the property? What are you talking about?
Well, it's the law. Eugenie will have the right to half of her mother's portion. And if she decides to claim her share...
She doesn't claim her share, Crusoe. I, her father, decide what is her due.
Not under the law. And if she chose to realise her inheritance, she could force you to pay her in liquid.
You mean I could be robbed by my own daughter? What kind of law is that?
In my view, it's right and just.
Not in mine.
Well, you must pray your wife doesn't die then. Perhaps if you were to release Eugenie from her prison so that she could sit by her mother's bedside, this would help Madame Grandet to rally.
My daughter defied me, Crucial. She made a fool of me.
I know she did. But surely you've punished her enough.
Cruel to be kind, you see, that's all. I'm harsh with her because I love her.
I believe you, sir. I do. But I think the cruelty has gone far enough.
All right. I'm tired of being your jailer. I'm setting you free. Oh. Now you can go and be with your mother. Perhaps you can finish that stupid half-knitted muffler. Kiss and make up, eh? Wait a minute, what have you got there? What's this case?
Leave it, Father, please. It belongs to Charles.
Gold embossed? That's ebony. Worth a small mint. He gave you this in exchange for your coins, did he? Well, didn't you tell me? Perhaps it was quite a good stroke of business. Perhaps we can make good your loss.
Please don't touch it, Papa.
I smell 22-carat gold.
No. Leave us alone.
Oh, yes, buy it. Oh, beautiful yellow stuff.
Stop. You're breaking it. This was a sacred trust. What? Kill me first, by all the saints. Put your knife in my heart.
What in heaven's name?
Stop it, Nana. This belongs to Charles. I promise I'll guard it with my life. Make him go away.
No, Mr. Grande. Your punishings and furies have gone far enough. Do you want to kill everybody in this house?
You get your hands off me. No, how dare you?
I won't stand by to see this anymore. You should be the one in prison. Look what you've done. Your wife near to death and your daughter weak as a sparrow. Is this how you love them? Is this what either of them have deserved?
Make him leave my room.
Go, sir. Do as she says.
All right. Make a villain out of me if you want. I only punished as I saw fit. But let's have no more snivelling. Let's forgive and forget. Hey? I'll say I'm sorry if that's what you're after. Come on. Give your old father a kiss.
What's happening?
Go to your mother, Eugenie. Go, quickly.
Okay, I'll make them.
You overstepped the mark there, I know. To lay your hands on me like that. Servant of a master. I'd say that was a sacking offence.
Do as you please. But you should know your name is reviled now in this town. Who else would spend her days keeping you alive? That was Madame Grande's last day on this earth. Poor sweet soul. She died in her daughter's arms. At least Eugénie could be with her. She told me that her mother gave her wise counsel before she died. I said, what was it then? And Miss Eugénie clung to me and wept and said it was the most precious thing anybody had ever said to her. But she wouldn't tell me what.
I have documents here. Cruchot has certified their legality. They state that the creditors have agreed finally at 5%.
5%? You told me 4%.
Yeah, I misjudged them by 1%.
That's the next 40,000. Who's going to pay that?
You are. Gold is down again. Sell some bonds, buy gold, and watch it rise. Your coffers will fill back up.
You should pay it, de Grasse. It was your miscalculation.
But it's not my debt.
Oh, God's teeth. Well, I'll never be shot at this business.
I strongly advise you to settle at 5%. Then you're clear of it, for the time being.
5%? God almighty!
It's the very best settlement you're going to get. But we should turn now to the question of your late wife's will.
The will? Muddle of a document, isn't it? I can't understand a word of it. A fool said this and a fool mentioned that.
Well, you have presumably understood, exactly as I warned you, that your daughter inherits half of your wife's portion, which includes a share of the Fafon estate. Grande, are you listening?
Yes, I'm listening.
Cruchot and I have given some thought as to how you might retain your late wife's property at Fafon intact for your lifetime, that at least.
Well, go on.
What we feel is that Miss Eugénie, though she will one day inherit everything you own, has no immediate need of the Fafon revenue at present, and indeed that it might be dangerous to give her money at the moment for obvious reasons.
You mean she might get on a boat to the confounded Indies?
She might. Yeah. Or be tempted to send money to her cousin and then lose it all.
God's teeth!
So what we thought was we could draw up a little deed for Eugénie to sign. With her signature, she would renounce the Froidfond estate and the rest of her mother's portion in favour of you, her father, for your lifetime.
All right. Oh, but supposing she didn't sign, you know she's taken to opposing me.
Well, it's merely a deferment of what will eventually be hers, so I can't see why she wouldn't agree to it.
She has no desire to see you ruined. How would you both live?
Oh, God knows. As we live now, on bread and partridges. What?
Are you happy for Cruchot to prepare the deed?
Well, for once, you two have come up with something helpful. Now, prepare it quickly. I want this done as fast as you can.
Good. Well, that concludes our meeting.
Write it today, Cruchot. I, Eugénie Grande, renounce...
There is just one more thing. My fees. I've prepared a bank draft in my firm's favour. Here. And Maître Cruchot has agreed neither of us can do any more work for you unless you sign it.
Can't see it properly. Haven't got my spectacles on.
Put them on, then.
I think I left them at home.
Very well. This is what it says. You agree to pay me the sum of 5,279 francs. Here's a pen. Sign it, please.
Well, give me the blasted pen. You know it's daylight robbery.
Just sign.
Oh, I can't do it. My hand's paralysed.
Come on. Enough charades.
Oh, look. I can't move my hand.
Sign it, for God's sake.
I'm trying. Look, it's paralysed. My bones have locked themselves. It's the beginning of the end.
It was true. His hand was locked shut. It was his right hand. How was he to prune his vines? How was he to turn the locks to his strong room? And, Lord love us, meal times were a penance. Bits of food all over the table and down his shirt front.
Shall I help you cook that, Papa?
I can manage. Yeah, it's a damn slippery plate, that's all. No.
Here, sir.
Get me a different kind of plate.
They're all the same, Monsieur Grande.
No, they're not. Take this away. I'll find another one. Now, you listen to me, Happy. You wouldn't want to see your poor old father cast out from his vine fields, would you?
Of course not.
No, I thought you wouldn't. So I had Crusoe draw up a little deed to stop anyone trying to chuck me off my land or poach the Froidfond estate, you see?
I don't know what you're talking about, Father.
I'm talking about French law. That putrefying infection that spreads its tentacles over all our honest endeavours and decrees that my own flesh and blood could ruin me, if you so choose.
Ruin you?
Take from me half my estate and all that remains to me of your mother's portion.
Why would I do that?
Because it's that damn law. So, this is the deed, and you must sign. We must cheat the law, you see, Eugenia, with your little mark on a piece of paper. Take the law into our own hands. Even if one of them is paralysed, even if the world has put your mother into the ground, even if my beloved France is full of fools and popinjays.
Papa, are you all right?
Was that the name? Beautiful place once. Choked by neglect, by cheats, liars, by faint hearts, cowards, by all who set their wills against mine. The paper is all, the deed is all. Here.
Talk to me. What's happening? Nanon? Nanon, come quickly.
Come on, sir. Let's pick you up. Put your arm around my neck.
His voice is all strange.
Help me to lift him up, pet. He's a dead weight.
Papa, speak to us. Nanon, look at him.
Sir, can you lift your head? Oh, my Lord, I think we better get Dr. Bergeron. Monsieur Grande, it's Nanon. Can you say a word to me?
Guard the gold, the yellow boys. Guard with your life.
He couldn't move. No more than to twist his neck this way and that. And oh, mon Dieu, what a painful sight he was. We laid him in his bed and called Dr. Bergeron. But the doctor was mystified. He tried to talk to Monsieur Grande, but his speech had gone from him. He could make noises like some animal in the jungle. Miss Eugenie and I took it in turns to sit with him. He couldn't talk to us, but I knew there was something that was tormenting him. He kept calling out and moving his head in the direction of his strong room. So when Miss Eugenie was downstairs, I lifted him out of his bed and carried him there.
My master. The strong room door. But if you want to see inside, you must tell me where the keys are. That's no help to me, sir. Can you move your head to show me the direction? All right, don't hurt yourself. What in the world is... Draw, are you saying? Your desk drawer? Right. Let me look there. Are these the ones? Let me try. Don't upset yourself, sir, please. I'm doing my best. on. Here we are, there it is. Your fortune, safe as you can see. Look, let me hold a gold bar against your cheek. Can you feel this cold of it, the heavy weight? Sir? Oh, Lord save us. Leave me, my master. Oh, no. Please don't leave me.
I want to say, on behalf of the Cruchot family, Mademoiselle Eugenie, that we offer you our profoundest sympathy.
Thank you.
And on behalf of the de Grassin family, Adolf especially sent you his fondest thoughts at this sad time.
That's very kind of him. Please will you tell him that I often wind up the little bird he gave me, and its song brings me comfort.
I certainly will.
Now, I think we should get on with the business of your late father's will. He left just one small bequest to your servant, Nanon. Otherwise, as the only child of your father and the late Madame Grandet, née Bertellière, you are the sole beneficiary of their joint estate.
I've been privileged to assist Maître Cruchot in the quantification of your father's assets. It may be that there are some minor pertinences and appanages that we've overlooked, but we have been able to arrive at an approximate estimate. Cruchot.
Yes, well, here it is, Miss Eugenie. You inherit an estate valued at approximately 19 million.
Did you say 19 million?
Yes.
I think there must be a mistake.
There's no mistake.
But we lived without candlelight. Without fires in winter.
Indeed. But don't they say that fear of poverty may be more corrosive to a life than poverty itself? And this is what I want to say to you. As an heiress, don't follow in those sad footsteps, Eugenie. Allow your wealth to make you happy.
There were some words my mother whispered to me before she died. She said to me, "Don't try to be happy. Try to be good." And I think these were the most beautiful words ever spoken to me. Would you not agree?
They are sound indeed, but everything in its measure, my dear. To find joy in the world is not wrong.
The winter came again. Nothing changed in the house. When I suggested lighting the fire in the parlour, Miss Eugenie would say to me, "Let's save the wood for when Charles comes back. He will feel the cold after his time in the heat of the West Indies, but I do not." And then, just as spring started to return, 2 years from the day when Monsieur Charles left for the Indies, something happened.
Nanon. Nanon, come here.
What is it, miss?
Look, a letter.
Oh, at last, at last. Now, everything's going to be all right. Here, quickly open it.
I can't. Look, it's postmarked Paris. If he's in France, why did he go to Paris and not come here?
Business matters, I expect.
But if only to see me. I feel sick, Nanon.
Oh, do you, Pert? Sit down, then. Sit on the stairs. I'll open the letter.
I'm frightened.
No need to be, I'm sure. Come on, let's open it, and 2 minutes from now you'll be full of joy. His handwriting's nice, nice and clear.
Read it, Nanon. Read it to me.
All right, here it is. "My dear cousin, you will learn with pleasure, I'm sure, that my enterprises in the Indies have succeeded.
You brought me good luck, and I have returned to France a rich man, just as my uncle hoped. The coins you gave me played a substantial part in this, and I will always be grateful to you. I enclose a bank draft repaying you this most precious sum.
You didn't need to put that. Or do that.
Shall I go on?
Yes.
Now, I must tell you that the little fortune I have made makes it possible for me to marry into the D'Aubron family. In marrying their only child, a girl of 19, Mathilde, for whom I do not care in the least, I will acquire a brilliant position in society.
He's getting married.
So you see, cousin, how frankly I lay before you the state of my heart. I'm sorry to say that boyhood illusions are over for me. Love in marriage is surely just a wild dream. But I will always remain your affectionate cousin, Charles Grande.
How am I to live now? Tell me how, Nano.
In my view, Charles Grande is a deceitful and selfish puppy dog. Pass me the mustard sauce, my love.
The trouble is, seductive young men like that do just as they please.
He has money now. He must have, or the Marquis d'Aubron would never let him into his family. But he still refuses to take responsibility for the remaining debt on his father's estate. He says it passed to the Grandes of Saumur, and that Cruchot and I had better sort it out.
That's horribly high-handed, I do see. And you worked so hard to stave off the bankruptcy. It was his name you were saving.
His name and his money. I've sent him the figures. I've told him that if he can find 51% of the principal, the creditors will likely settle and be done with it. But he refuses.
I think that's lamentable.
Quite so. And now it all begins again. Creditors hammering at my door.
Wait a minute, though, Gerard.
Hmm?
Give me some more wine, my dear. Perhaps I'm being naive, but it has come into my mind that the son of a bankrupt could never marry the daughter of a marquis, could he?
No, of course not, but the bankruptcy was fought off.
I know it was. But surely, with several millions still unpaid, there is no reason why a declaration of bankruptcy couldn't occur now.
No, I think there is no reason. Well glimpsed, my dear, the way through. Let's drink to your perspicacity.
You still love this little wind-up bird, don't you?
Yes.
You remember it was dear Monsieur Adolphe who gave you that.
I know.
So it was proof, wasn't it, that he understands you and knows what pleases you. And to me, that's a good sign in a young man.
Is it?
I know it's far too soon to be thinking about the future.
Please don't say any of this, Nanon.
No.
Eugénie, my dear.
Madame de Grasse.
I won't stay long. May I sit down? There's something important to tell you about your cousin.
I'm sorry, madame, but I think I prefer not to talk about...
No, I understand. But I thought you should know that his hopes for a noble marriage are about to be dashed. I should explain to you that my husband and I both feel that we have all been treated shabbily by a young man we did our best to help. You see? This marriage to the daughter of the Marquis d'Aubrion, it cannot now come to pass. My husband is resolved upon it, and is even now preparing papers to declare the bankruptcy we worked so long to avoid. So Charles Grandet's hopes for a gilded life in Paris society will soon come to an end.
I see.
No grand establishment in Paris will receive him once the bankruptcy is known. So, voila! What is he to do? My guess is that he may return to Saumur, but if I were you, I would close your door to him. Your door and your heart.
Thank you for telling me, madame.
I'll leave you now. Oh, I see you still have Adolf's little mechanical bird. And, of course, Adolf would like to be where it is. At your side. But you know that.
Wait. Please wait a moment, Madame de Grassin. I need to talk to your husband. Let me fetch some things from my room, and I'll come with you.
Well, Eugenie...
Please listen to me, Monsieur de Grassin, and don't say anything. I've made a decision, and nothing you can say or do will alter it.
I'm listening.
I came to tell you not to declare the bankruptcy on Victor Grandet's estate.
My dear girl...
I'll pay the debt in full, both principal and interest, at 5%. It's nothing to me, and it will save Charles's life.
Save his life?
Yes. To be cast out again from the world he loves would kill him. If you take away his good name, he will die, just as his father died.
The burden of this should not fall on you, Eugenie.
It's not a burden. I can give you a bank draft for the whole sum. What are those millions to me? And if you would be so kind when you go to Paris with the draft to return this to Charles. It's his dressing case which he put into my care while he was away.
Perhaps he might wish you to keep it.
I don't want to keep it. Can you be sure of finding Charles in Paris?
I assume for the moment he resides with the Marquis d'Aubrion.
Oh, yes. Of course. I've been told the house is very magnificent.
A gentleman to see you, Monsieur Brodin.
Not now, I'm busy. Tell him to leave his card.
I come from Saumur.
Oh, we're all right. Monsieur de Grasse, wasn't it?
De Grassin.
Grassin, who cares about a name? We shouldn't care, but we do. I will admit to you that a few hours ago I lived in the expectation of becoming the heir to the Marquis d'Aubrion, and now some fell rumour of my father's bankruptcy is circulating again, and I suppose that I may remain plain Charles Grandet forever and a day. It is absolutely beastly.
Well, I bring you a message from your cousin.
My cousin. How is she?
She's very well.
I did write to her to explain.
And very rich.
Rich, did you say?
Yes.
By what means?
By the estate left to her by her late father.
That Froidfond place?
That forms part of it. A small part. The overall value is some 19 million.
What? Did I hear you right? 19 million?
Yes.
You're making it up, de Grasse, are you? You're making it up to torture me?
No. Now, she has asked me to present to you this bank draft for the sum of 4 million.
What?
Take it. Here it is. She sends her congratulations on your marriage and wishes to make your happiness more complete by buying back your father's good name. Eugenie also asked me to return this object to you. I believe it's some kind of dressing case.
Eugenie. Oh, my sweet cousin. Oh, help me, de Grasse. What am I to do? Now I'll be unhappy my whole life.
I doubt you will, my friend.
Why wasn't I told about this?
About the inheritance.
What about all of it?
I'm telling you now.
When it's too late. It's too late.
Yes. But there we are. You chose your path. You made money in the slave trade, I heard.
I only did what I was able to do. I had nothing.
Except a box of very valuable coins.
Oh, don't remind me. Don't. I've done wrong. I can see it. I'll never forgive myself.
There seemed to be no summer that year. I often tried to persuade Miss Eugenie to take a walk by the river, but she said she didn't like the river anymore. It was silted up and would never flow again as it had done in the past. She sat in the parlour reading or knitting, as though she were already an old woman. Then one day, something happened to me. Old Cornwallé, the coachman, who I'd known for 15 years, came and asked me to marry him. Me! Old Nana, whom nobody wanted. I can tell you I was flattered. I think me nose went pink. I told Cornwallé I'd think about it. He's got a bit of a stoop now and hair sprouting out of his ears, but his face is wholesome and kind, and, God forgive me, he took out his manhood and showed it to me there and then, and it was as hard as a piece of wood, and something stirred in me when I saw that. But what was I to do? I couldn't go off and marry Cornwallé and leave Eugenie all alone. Could I? And yet I wanted to have a life of my own. And all I could think of to let me have this life was to explain everything to Monsieur Cruchot and then wait for the day when he would pluck up the courage to arrive at our door.
I brought you some flowers, Eugenie. Roses this time.
Thank you. I'll call Nanon and she'll find a vase.
No, don't call Nanon. I've got something very important to say to you. I expect you've heard that I've been made a deputy in the government of Saumur.
Deputy? Deputy? Hmm. I find that a strange word. What is a deputy constrained to do?
Constrained? Well, we form part of a chamber. And the chamber it is who oversees the good governance of the town.
Ah. Well, the river then.
I beg your pardon?
The river is full of silt. The chamber should attend to that. The water can't flow freely. Why is the question of silt not addressed?
I don't know. But now you've drawn my attention to it. You're quite right. We should hire some dredgers.
Before the summer is gone?
Yes. I promise I shall oversee it. But now, please listen to me, Eugenie. You know my heart. I want you to be my wife. I've loved you for a very long time, and now I feel, as a deputy, I can offer you a respectable position in our little society. What I mean is, I believe that you may at last see that I am worthy of you, and that I could make you happy. I will be the doctor of your broken heart, if you will only trust me. I've drawn up a deed renouncing any claim to your fortune. I will share my income as a lawyer and a deputy with you, and you will share yours with me, and that will be that. Then nobody will say that I'm marrying you for your inheritance, but only for what you are.
What am I, Monsieur Cruchot? I do wish you'd tell me, for these days I believe I no longer know. There was a moment, very brief, when I felt myself to be myself, Eugenie Grandet, and part of the world, and I saw wonder in everything. But it didn't last. If I were to agree to become your wife, all I could offer you would be my indifference.
Then that is what I would take.
But how could any man agree to that?
I am not any man, my dearest love. I'm your slave.
So there were two weddings at the end of the summer. Mine to Cornwallé and Mademoiselle Eugenie's to Monsieur Cruchot. And mine, God forgive me, was a revelation to me, old as I am. For Cornwallé, well, he liked the hot and shameless side of marriage, and bless me, but I grew to like it too. And I said one day to my husband, we should say our prayers to Jesus for behaving so often like animals in their season. But all he did was laugh and take a tender little bite out of my nose. Deputy Cruchot knew no such joy. Miss Eugenie had warned him that she would keep to her own bed and never let him near her, and this is what she did. He died within 2 years of the wedding. Cornwallé said to me, poor man, I declare he died of cold, his blood turned to ice. We moved back into the old house. We couldn't leave her all alone, could we? We occupied the room where my master had once slept, next to his strong room. And often on moonlit nights, I'd hear Miss Eugenie get up and go to the strong room and turn the locks and the bolts on the heavy door. When I first heard it, I said to my husband, what in the world is she doing? And he said, Madame Cornwallé, you know perfectly well what she's doing. She's sitting very still in the moonlight, staring at her gold. She keeps the Indian bird in there. Sometimes she winds it up and we can hear it singing. As the dawn comes near,
in the final part of Eugène Grandet by Honoré de Balzac, dramatised by Rose Tremaine, Grandet was Ian McKellen, Nanon Shirley Dixon, and Eugénie Alison Pettit. Madame Grandet was Anna Calder Marshall, Cruchot Harry Haddon Payton, de Grassin David Horovitch, Madame de Grassin Jenny Funnell, and Charles Blake Ritson. Original music was composed and performed by Lucinda Mason Brown. The cellist and treble recorder player was Alison Baldwin, and the sound design was by David Chilton. Eugène Grandet was a Goldtalk Essential production for BBC Radio 4, directed by Gordon House.